This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodl Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Hello, I'm with Dr. Alistair Edge from the University of Durham, who works on clusters of galaxies from an X-ray point of view and is now working his way across the electromagnetic spectrum. So hello, Alistair. Thank you for joining us today. And would you like to tell us a bit about your research?
Yes, my research is about clusters of galaxies, which are very large assemblages of galaxies and matter in between. They have very large masses. They affect the light that passes through them through gravitational lensing. But my particular interest is the gas that's in between the galaxies that's held through gravitation within those huge systems. And I'm interested in the gas in between these galaxies, which is emitting X-rays. And as it emits X-rays, it cools down. And over the last 30 or 40 years, where we've understood X-ray emission, we believe that a lot of that gas all cools down and forms cold molecular gas around the galaxy. And early observations indicated that there will be lots of this gas, and it appears to be much less of it through some mechanism related to the heating of that gas. And what we're beginning to realize is a certain amount of gas cools, falls into the galaxy, falls into a supermassive black hole, and then the energy released as it falls into the supermassive black hole emits radio jets, big radio galaxies, which heat up the gas and prevent any more gas cooling. This process called AGN feedback has been very popular in the last 5 or 6 years, people explaining many different aspects of galaxy evolution through this process. And what I've been studying is this AGN feedback within clusters, a relatively specialized area, but the process in that seems to apply to other smaller galaxies and galaxies at much higher redshift when the initial period of galaxy formation was at its most active. This cooling of gas, creation of stars, and falling onto a central supermassive black hole seems to have been much more frequent and common. And then the lessons we're learning from galaxies nearby in the cores of clusters can be applied to the high redshift.
So how does the gas end up between the galaxies to start off with?
Good question. The hot gas that we're seeing seems to have been gas that falls in and doesn't instantly go into individual galaxies. It's the gas and baryonic material, the stuff that, we are made out of, falls into the gravitational potential of all the dark matter of the cluster and misses the galaxies, gets heated up, and sits just in a gravitational equilibrium with the other gas around it, and it becomes dense and hot. And the amount of the effective temperature that we see of the gas, which is tens of millions of degrees, is representative of the huge amount of mass that we see within the cluster itself. And we can actually determine a lot about the dark matter from the gas and the properties of the gas, density and temperature of that gas, which you can measure directly from the X-rays. You can also infer the gravitational mass of all of the material within the cluster.
So within the cluster, is there just one super, super massive black hole, or is there several?
There are many supermassive black holes in each individual galaxy, but size of supermassive black hole goes with size of galaxy, and the big galaxies in the middle of clusters are the biggest of the big. They have the biggest supermassive black holes. There appears to be a very clear connection between the black hole and the size of the galaxy, and the galaxies in the middle of clusters are the biggest galaxies that we know, and also the most potentially most powerful in radio galaxy terms.
So the gas falls into the supermassive black hole from the clusters.
Yep.
This eventually depletes the gas supply, and then it turns to the switch off of the AGN.
Yes, you will have a cycle in which gas cools, falls into the middle. Some of that it releases lots of energy, which then radiates and energetically sends shock waves out into the intercluster medium. And you look in the X-rays, you can see what look like ripples, which are effectively very low sound waves, but 20 octaves below what we could possibly hear, radiate out and push energy into the intercluster medium and heat it up. So there's a cycle of gas cools, falls in, that effect of that cooling gas prevents more gas cooling. So you have a sort of steady state of outbursts of these massive black holes, material coming in. It goes through an outburst, gas flow stops, it goes quiescent and then comes back again.
And you can tell all this from the X-ray observations?
You can tell it from the X-ray observations, the radio observations, and looking at a large number of these systems. The number that are going through these active outbursts is relatively small, but looking at, say, 1,000 clusters, you can say something about the lifetime of these events going off by looking at a whole set of clusters and seeing them at different stages of these outbursts.
Sorry, can I just come in there? The AGN is the active galactic nucleus.
Yes,
the actual,
beg my pardon, I was falling into jargon.
The actual central part where all the activity is happening.
Yes, so when a supermassive black hole undergoes a period of gas falling in and lots of energy coming out, it's observationally recognised as an active galactic nucleus, or an AGN, to astronomers.
And how do you infer that there's a black hole there? Is it just that those sort of temperatures and that amount of activity is the only thing that can really explain it, or is there any other evidence?
There are a number of elements to the evidence, one of which is that these things vary on timescales of the order of a year, and that requires something quite big and massive, but relatively small, to be generating that energy. So it couldn't be stars if it varies on timescales of the order of years. The other thing is that we see massive, very energetic relativistic jets in these systems, which again, it would be very difficult to generate from stars, but are relatively straightforward to explain with supermassive black holes.
As you look at just clusters of galaxies, can you see gas between clusters of galaxies, or is that not something observed?
It is something you can observe. You can observe it indirectly, in that you can look at a background quasar or an object which is producing light in the far distance and seeing gas within and elements between clusters of galaxies that absorbs a certain frequency of light, and you see a small dip at a given wavelength related to that gas. You can also hope in future, although not yet, to look at observations in the ultraviolet and extreme ultraviolet for the much cooler, less dense gas in between galaxy clusters held within these filaments that are believed to connect all of the big objects we see in the universe. And if you look at simulations, they predict a very filamentary, stringy nature of the universe, and gas will be held within those at different temperatures. And those are a very active area of astronomical research.
So going back to the clusters of galaxies that you observed in the X-rays, you've seen sort of an hourglass-type structure in the X-ray emission. Yes. Could you explain that a bit more, please?
So the one object I showed in the talk that I gave this afternoon was Hydra A, powerful radio galaxy in the Hydra constellation. It has a very powerful radio source, which has two jets and lobes coming out, and that non-thermal radio plasma gets ejected very rapidly into this hot intracluster medium, and it pushes it away through pressure, and you end up with less X-ray emission coming from those regions where there's strong radio emission, and you end up with things which look very symmetric, and as I described it, an hourglass structure of the intracluster medium gas being pushed away, and you see depressions. And sometimes you can see a shell of hot plasma and gas that's been pushed out as this bubble of radio plasma expands, and you end up with more dense material immediately around it and a lot less material emitting X-rays inside. So you can end up with what appears to be a bright surface to this radio bubble.
And as you've been giving a talk here today at a meeting about ALMA, which is the Atacama Large Millimeter Array, how will you be able to use that instrument in your research?
So ALMA is particularly exciting for me because it actually gives us an opportunity to look at cold gas that we've seen only in glimpses and only at very low resolution. We have only been able to look and say there is a certain amount of cold molecular gas in that galaxy, but where it is within that galaxy, I haven't been able to determine, because we haven't been able to resolve different bits of the gas within a galaxy, and ALMA allows us to do that for the first time. And that's important because as the gas cools and falls into the galaxy, it begins to create a disk of material which rotates, and you see emission on one side coming towards us and on the other side going away from us. And that's what the object I was proposing that we observe early on in the initial stages of ALMA operations, an object which has a very clear gas disk where one side is moving towards us, the other away, and that would give us a very clear result very early on, which would encourage everyone to make the most of this large investment of money and some resources in this fantastic instrument.
So for the first time, you'll be able to look at the gas in a lower wavelength. Is that how you're able to see more of it?
What you were able to do is to use the telescopes separated and use this technique called interferometry. Previously, we only used one telescope and looked at an object. Using interferometry, you have many telescopes, each of which are looking at it, and through the magic of computing, you can compare those signals and actually create a telescope which is very much bigger and as large as the separation of the telescopes, not the size of the telescopes. And I've used this technique many times in the past, but it never ceases to amaze me that you can actually use these telescopes to create images of much higher resolution, more ability to see individual features than you would expect from something of the size of, say, 12 metres.
So it's a very exciting time coming up then.
It is a very exciting time. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alistair, for joining us and being on the Jodcast and being interviewed and telling us about your wonderful X-ray astronomy.
Thank you.